Hedrick Smith, Pulitzer Prize-winning former New York Times reporter and editor, and Emmy Award-winning producer correspondent, has established himself over the past 50 years as one of America's most distinguished journalists. He is the author of many books, including The Power Game, about the inner workings of Washington, D.C., and Who Stole the American Dream? An eye-opening account of how, over the past four decades, we have become two Americas. His website is ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org, whose mission it is to restore democracy, reduce inequality, and rebuild the power of the people. Welcome back to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, Hedrick Smith.
Wonderful to be with you again. Always important, always good.
Thank you, Hedrick Smith. You must be gratified by the huge turnout at these town meetings that are filling the seats and basically shocking a lot of Republican members of Congress and some Democrat as well around the country. Did this surprise you?
Actually, it didn't. It's really funny. I know certainly Trump didn't intend to do this, nor did Steve Bannon, his Rasputin in the White House. But, you know, accidentally and unintentionally, they have triggered and ignited a fire in the political prairies of this country. People are really upset. And it seems to me that when you saw how bitterly divided the country was during the 2016 election, I don't think it's any surprise at all that you had this massive march of women, not only in Washington and lots of other people besides women, but organized by women in Washington and something like 600 or 700 other cities around the country. And now the ferment is boiling on into the congressional members' meetings when they go back to their home districts and so forth. You know, there is, I think, to me, one of the most promising aspects of citizen action at the grassroots in America that we've seen for a long time. I don't think we've seen this kind of electricity, this kind of ferment, this sense of people that they need to come off the sidelines and get engaged if they want to see a fair, more inclusive democracy, and if they want to stop the dismantling of programs that they think are important.
And I must say, apropos my recent little book, Breaking Through Power, It's Easier Than We Think, I pointed out that it didn't take all that many people when the Tea Parties flooded these town meetings in 2009. And it hasn't taken all that many people when progressives and people who are offended by the Trump regime and what's coming on health insurance and environment and war and peace, et cetera. My guess is that there hasn't been more than 200,000 people already participating in these town meetings. Now, that doesn't include the inauguration demonstrations, as you say, over 600 around the country, arguably the biggest one-day demonstration in American history on January 21st, 2017. And so people are beginning to learn how to maneuver and put the pressure on their senators and representatives, only 535 of them, and obviously there are millions of people back home. But I was astonished by some of the creative signs. You'll love this one. A woman comes to a Republican member of Congress town meeting. She had been, along with her other marchers, accused of being paid, organized, that it wasn't spontaneous. And her sign says, "I'm not being paid, Senator, but you are."
And I'm not getting my money's worth. You know, Ralph, it's amazing.
Right.
When we think back to the 60s and think of the civil rights movement, and we think of the women's movement, and we think of the environmental movement, and we think of the movement that you helped kick off, the consumers movement, with that book of yours, Unsafe at Any Speed, about the mechanical defects Detroit was building in the cars that were causing accidents, that were killing people, the anti-war movement. People in this country, the middle class in this country, expected to exercise grassroots power in the 60s and the 70s, and they expected Washington to respond. And what's happened over the last three decades, as you know better than anybody, is there's been this decline in not just civic engagement, but decline in the confidence that civic engagement and civic action at the grassroots could make a difference. And I think what's going on now is people are starting to say, hey, we're angry. We're going to do something about it. And B, by the way, maybe we can actually get something done. That's the whole point of this website we have, ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org, which is to highlight the progress that people are making in unlikely places like Arizona and Florida and South Dakota. These are not states
Utah.
That people would assume. It would assume would be the locus of citizen action. I mean, California, okay, yeah, it happens there. Massachusetts, maybe. By the way, New York, it's behind the curve. It's happening in states all around the country. And I think if more people knew that there was an effective public funding campaign in Connecticut for state legislative elections, a good expose law on dark money in California, an amazing gerrymander reform in the state of Florida, they start saying, wait a second, in Oklahoma or in Kansas or in the Dakotas or in Pennsylvania, for crying out loud, we could do something here, which is my
hope. If people
get the information, they get the bug.
That's a remarkable aspect of it. It's left, right. It's red state, blue state, the turnout by people coming out seeking justice. I guess Donald Trump is an equal opportunity provocateur. For that, we can thank him. But, you know, the members of Congress just come back from a week back home in the recess. They're in a state of shock. That's all they're talking about now. The Republicans are trying to put a brave front on it, saying it's orchestrated, it's just professional protesters. It's total nonsense. It's about as spontaneous you can get it. I mean, there is a website called indivisible.org that tells people there are going to be town meetings and so on. But people now are so determined that if senators and representatives cancel their town meetings in the future or just want to have telephone town meetings, they're telling their members, we're going to have our own town meetings, and you're going to come to our town meetings, and we're the people, and you're our hired hands. So the key, what do you see to continue the stamina so this thing doesn't peter out? Because already the Republicans are having second thoughts about health insurance. They're having second thoughts about cracking down on regulatory enforcement efforts by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, et cetera. What do you think is needed to keep the stamina going?
I think a couple of things are needed. It's easy, and it was easy right after the election, particularly with the Women's March the day after the president's inauguration, basically to be out there and saying we're opposed to Trump and Trump's effort to dismantle what they call the administrative state, you know, the safety net for all kinds of average people and poor people. Whatnot. What's really important here, Ralph, I think, and you know this from your long work, is being focused on some issues. You just touched on a couple of really good ones. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is really an important agency that established under the Dodd-Frank law back in 2010 that has gone out and has helped consumers against predatory lenders, whether they're bad auto loans or bad student loans or just financial practices that were deceptive, misleading people. People need to understand that that's an agency they need to protect. You know, there are a lot of people who are upset about the Republican idea of repealing Obamacare, repealing the Affordable Care Act. You know, the 20 million people who got health insurance under that, they don't want their health insurance taken away. So people have to have, I think, something specific to fight for and something specific to press back against Congress on. So it's not just we're unhappy, you're messing up. But no, don't touch. I mean, at the moment, Trump's got the message, don't touch our Social Security, don't touch our Medicare. But it needs to go beyond that. Don't touch the consumer protection laws. One of the things they want to do, and Trump has talked about, is taking the restraints off Wall Street. Now, Wall Street took us over the cliff in 2008. And the whole idea of that law of Dodd-Frank, which in many people's opinion wasn't adequate, wasn't tough enough, is the bankers want the restraints taken off so they can do it again. We don't want that to happen.
Rick, I think one key distinction is it's hard to get people out for reforms that give them what they deserve, but they don't have. But what Trump has succeeded in doing is putting in the minds of millions of Americans, whether they're conservative workers, liberal workers, that they're going to be taking away things that they now have, like health insurance under Obamacare, however limited that is, like the prospects of a pending minimum wage increase. When you say to people, we're going to take away what you have, then they get much more upset than when you say to people, don't you know you deserve better pensions, you deserve better health and safety protections, et cetera. Don't you think that's an important distinction?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that, Ralph. I mean, that people are going to fight for things that they know are benefiting them now. They don't want it taken away. So I think that's going to happen. And the targeting, having some sense of an issue is important. But I think there's also something else out there, Ralph. People sense the political system is broken. They felt that way long before Trump was elected. Look at what Bernie Sanders was able to do in the Democratic primary campaign. I mean, he had people really upset about the power of Wall Street, about mega money flowing into campaigns, about gerrymandering, about the distortions of American democracy. So I hope that at least some of this energy, and some people are smart enough to say, you know, we don't need just to fight for policies, but we need to go upstream and fix the system, the broken political system that is generating these bad outcomes for ordinary people. Gerrymandering is creating gridlock in Washington. Gerrymandering is enabling mega money to come in and threaten people on the right and on the left with being primaried with very cheap campaigns that push both extremes, left and right, further to the extreme and make it impossible to solve issues or deal with issues like climate change or immigration or entitlement reform or whatever issue you were on, right or left. Washington doesn't work because it's been playing from two end zones instead of working in the middle of the field. So I hope people will start to see they got to fix the system. Big money, gerrymandering, public funding, voting rights, those are all fundamental to make democracy fair and inclusive. And that's the big banana in the end, it seems to me.
And in so doing, we've been talking with Rick Smith, Pulitzer Prize winner, and the architect of a very important blog, which we'll tell you how to reach in a minute. The strategy's got to be in personam lobbying on your lawmakers. Don't have just mass rallies on weekends, important as they are, where the energy goes into the ether. You've got to zero in, laser beam, on your senators, your representatives, your governor, your state lawmakers. It's not all that many people. We know their names. We know where their offices are. We've got their phone numbers. That is the most important tactic. Once you decide what you think your lawmakers should do, you've got to focus on them. The most successful lobbyists in the country do not engage in mass rallies like NRA and AIPAC. They focus right on the senator, representative, the staff, who their doctors, who their lawyers, who they play golf with, who funds them, what their votes are like, how lazy they may be, etc. So in personam lobbying on your lawmakers.
But let me just add one thing. In personam, let's get it out of Latin. It means going face to face. I mean, part of the problem with today's world is that a lot of people have the feeling that if I just click on a petition that's being circulated by some group online, I'm counted. No, what politicians really pay attention to, and I've spent five decades reporting in and around Washington, it's a long time. What I've seen politicians pay attention to is not a stream of phone calls, not a stream of emails. It's people showing up, either in their offices in Washington or at their home district offices or at their town meetings. And it's not just once. It's coming back time after time saying, Senator, I told you before, we told you before, don't touch the Consumer Protection Agency. And we're back here again, and you're fiddling around with it. Get your hands off it. Get your hands off Medicare. Whatever it is that you care about, coming back again and again. And after a while, a senator and the congressperson start to say, well, if I do that, I'm dead meat in my next election, and I don't want to be. So it's that
that's a very personal pressure. Listeners, that's a very important point. You got to tell them you're coming back. Otherwise, they think you're one appearance a shouter at them, and you're not going to keep coming back. Once they know you're going to keep coming back, they take you much more seriously. That's why they take corporate lobbyists so seriously. They keep coming back. You've just written an article called Trump's Long List of Promises, at least 633 of them that he's made to voters. Can he keep them? And that raises a question of how soon do you think the Trump voters are going to realize that he's betraying them, that he campaigned against Wall Street, for example. He's got all kinds of Wall Street people in high positions. He's got corporatists, militarists, some would say racists, in top positions in his government. Talk about betrayal.
Well, you know, it's going to happen. There isn't just one block of Trump voters and one block of Trump supporters. I mean, there's a lower middle class, working class, a bunch of voters who voted for Trump. There is the core of his base. They're counting on him to really change the economics of the American system, that they've been left out. They've been left behind. This is the subject of my book, Who Stole the American Dream, for three or four decades. and they're counting on him to fix it. I think they're going to hang in there for quite a while with him, with the Redick. But there are other people who wavered, who couldn't bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton, who waited till the very end to make up their mind. They're not as firmly glommed on a Trump. And it seems to me some of them are already, you're noticing his approval rating going down, not by much, but by a few points. Some people are already saying, wait a second, he said he was going to control Wall Street. He attacked Hillary Clinton for getting $650,000 speaking fees from Goldman Sachs and being too close to banks like Goldman Sachs on Wall Street. And yet he's named three people from Goldman Sachs to the Treasury Department, to the head of his National Economic Council, this guy Steve Bannon, his Rasputin, who whispers in his ear all his policies. These guys are all coming from Goldman Sachs. This doesn't ring true. He's got a guy named Wilbur Ross, a predatory industrialist who's made enormous amounts of money, particularly shipping jobs to Mexico and so forth. And Trump says he's against that. Is this guy really going to turn around and start making policies work on behalf of keeping jobs in America when he's spent the last 20 years of his life making money the other way? I think there are already people who are asking these questions. But my experience, Ralph, is it takes quite a while for the general public to wake up to a con job. People don't pick it up fast. First place, people don't like to admit they've made a bet and they're wrong. So they tend to stick with it. You know, I mean, it's just like gambling. Get in a gambling house and you bet on a number and your number is going to come through for me. And you waste a lot of money on that number before you finally say, hey, I shouldn't be playing the game, or at least the number is not working for me. So, in politics, it's somewhat the same way. I think it's going to take a while. I don't know whether or not it's going to take a year, but it certainly isn't going to happen in weeks. The people who are out there demonstrating now were people who were opposed to Trump at the beginning. There were people who were opposed to his agenda. They now see him moving on his agenda, cracking down on immigration, taking money away from safety net programs, trying to remove regulations that were protecting the middle class, protecting our economy. For Trump supporters to move to those kinds of positions, I think it's going to take time. It's not going to happen quickly. What we're seeing is the people who are already skeptical now becoming much more active, much more vocal, and they'll bring people along with them. But it'll be a gradual process, at least by my experience. I mean, think back to the war in Vietnam and how long it took people to wake up. I mean, it took years for people to see that war wasn't going anywhere. And people were dying. I mean, the body bags were coming back. The battlefield results were bad. And I can remember reporting on that as a reporter for the New York Times, both in Saigon and back in Washington. It took a very long time for people to wake up that this thing was going wrong. And that was a war. So I don't think this is going to happen quickly, which makes it all the more important what you were saying before, that the people who do spot it, who do see the con job, who are worried about the direction of the administration, and who have things they want to defend. It isn't just being anti-Trump. It's saying these are safety net programs. These are protections we need. These are regulations we need on Wall Street, not to be anti-Wall Street, not to be anti-American, not to be anti-Trump, but to protect the whole economy from going over a cliff. We've been over the cliff once. I mean, go off of the second time, that's stupid. So we've had that experience.
Do you see an awakening Democratic Party with vibrant candidates and comprehensive programs to assist this public citizen energy that you're seeing?
That's a jackpot question. I don't see it yet. I see the need for it. I see some people in the Democratic Party talking about it. I don't see evidence yet that the Democratic Party realizes how badly out of touch it has gotten from its own base. I mean, Democratic Party used to be the party that represented working people, middle class families, ordinary people in the countryside, in the cities, in the suburbs and so forth. I mean, the loss Hillary Clinton suffered in the 2016 election is full of evidence that lots of people who used to vote Democratic didn't vote. Some of them didn't even come out to vote at all. If you look at Milwaukee, for example, Wisconsin was a surprise state that Trump carried and that Hillary Clinton lost. The turnout in Milwaukee County, which is a heavily Democratic area, was 60,000 lower in 2016 than it had been in 2012. If those 60,000 voters had shown up and they'd voted 4-1, 3-1 Democratic, Hillary Clinton would have won Wisconsin. Same kind of thing happened in some parts of Michigan. So, no, I don't see evidence, much evidence yet, that the Democratic Party has awakened. Do you see people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and others trying to reach that constituency, speaking for that constituency? Yes. But is there evidence that the party has begun to recruit candidates for state representative from some of these districts, for state senator, for the kind of offices you need to win. The Republicans back in 2010 went after control of state legislatures, and they picked up 675 seats nationwide. Today, they control 32 of the state governments, both houses of the legislature and the governor's chair. That's where the Democratic Party's got to rebuild itself. There's been way too much focus on can we win the presidency. And now suddenly they've awakened and they lost not only the presidency, but they lost control of the House, the Senate, and 32 state governments.
That was a very historic point you just referred to in 2010, where with about $30 million and a few Republican strategists, that they replaced several hundred state legislative seats with Republicans, took control of the state legislature, took control of redistricting, while the Democrats were essentially asleep. That was recounted in a very important book by David Daley, who we had on the program. But before we conclude, we've been talking with Hedrick Smith. Can you tell people how they can reach you and your blog, which is a very, very informative one?
If you want to see that story of the Republicans, how they ran what they call the red map strategy to capture the state legislatures and to control the redistricting process and to gerrymander districts, you can find it on our website, reclaimtheamericandream.org. That's reclaimtheamericandream.org. What we have, Ralph, is we have an issue brief, which tells you about that. Then we have a progress report, which will tell you, and you won't believe the number I'm going to give you right now, 25 states are engaged in some form of effort to change gerrymandering. There may be a lawsuit. They may have set up an independent commission. They may be like Florida that passed a constitutional amendment that says you can't gerrymander with the intention to favor one political party over the other or to keep incumbents in office. And then you can go see the success story, how the heck Florida did it, how Arizona did it. Then you've got readings on the subject. Then you've got groups that can help you on the minimum wage, on student debt, on voting rights, on gerrymander reform, on mega money in politics, on dark money, on a slew of issues. And it's an informational site. I'm a journalist. I'm not pushing one policy or the other. I do believe in the need for reforming our democracy. That much I will advocate for. But it's up to you. But what's amazing on the site, I hope people find, is the story that the mainstream media isn't covering, and that is that reformers at the grassroots level are having amazing achievements. They're winning victories in places you would never imagine. And if you read about it, it's going to stir you up to say, damn it, we can do it in our community. We can do it in our city. We can do it in our state.
ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org by Hedrick Smith. Thank you very much, and we'll stay tuned.
Ralph, always a pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome, Rick.
We've been speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Hedrick Smith. We will link to ReclaimTheAmericanDream.org at Ralph Nader Radio.